Education Budget Division will come to order. And good morning.
There's nobody here?
No one present.
No one is there.
Senator Rummel.
Okay.
I see you're here, and if you'd like to go ahead. You have some people to testify. The reason we're starting more on time today is that the shift in time for committees, we actually have to squeeze two committee hearings in this room before noon. So we only have until 10 o'clock. And I thought we would start, and Higher Ed Committee will keep coming in here. I think we have to take everything down and another committee. I'm not sure which one it is. So welcome, Senator Rummel, and yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, those of you who are here, bright and early ones. Senate File 2943 is called the Community-Centered Schools Pilot Grant Bill. This bill creates an innovation grant that establishes two community-centered pilot projects. What is a community school? It is a place and set of partnerships between the school and community resources. The community school strategy integrates academics, health and social services, youth and community development, and other opportunities to improve student learning and to develop stronger families and communities. Not all community-centered schools look alike, and there are a number of community-centered models across the country. What these models do have in common, however, is that they connect the community and the school to serve the common good and to achieve better results. Here are some of the kinds of results people have noted in the data. Children are ready to learn when they enter school and every day thereafter. All children and youth are engaged in academic experience and enriched opportunities that help them see positive futures and achieve high standards. Students are healthy, physically, socially, and emotionally. Youth are prepared for adult roles, both in the workplace and as parents and citizens. Families and neighborhoods are safe, supportive, and engaged. Parents and community members are involved with their schools and their own lifelong learning. So why are community schools important at this time? Well, number one, there is significant data across the country that supports community-centered schools as an important ingredient in closing the achievement gap. Absolutely, high-quality teaching and high academic standards are critical to student success. No one disputes that. Nonetheless, the data does show that community-centered schools are a complementary strategy that, combined with good teaching and high expectations, improve academic performance because, one, they improve student attendance and decrease the dropout rate, and, two, they also decrease mobility and increase parent involvement. These are factors contributing to academic success. In addition, however, partnerships between community and schools make fiscal sense. As our state demographer keeps telling us, we are entering a new normal, that the key to Minnesota's success in the future will be our ability to be more productive. The community center schools concept is an innovation that does just that. It shares the responsibility for our children. On the one hand, schools concentrate on their core mission of academic learning. And on the other hand, schools partner with their community organizations to provide for other student needs that support learning. This partnership, one, reduces redundancies within the community, and two, it increases access to opportunities and services that students need. In addition, it increases the community role and responsibility for children's learning. That, in turn, increases wider support for our communities. Our schools. So what does this bill do? This bill creates two pilots, one in an urban area and one in a suburban area. In particular, we want to learn how to develop successful community school partnerships. We want to see how various models of community center schools might function and how each model contributes to closing the achievement gap. The needs of students vary from district to district, and the resources each community offers are different. So how do schools match the needs of their students to the resources in their local communities? And then to quote a friend from the Blandon Foundation, we heard this the other day, they said, by allowing communities the ability to choose what is best for their children and families, you are granting them the opportunity to focus and build on strengths, to respect the uniqueness of their area, and to build a program that reflects community culture. It also puts them in the driver's seat of leveraging additional resources. And by appropriating funds to community partnerships, you are encouraging them to form solid, trusting relationships with like-minded agencies and organizations to reduce duplicating efforts and streamline services. Members, I have three witnesses with me at the table. I have two superintendents who have begun developing these community partnerships, and I think that they can help us learn how to create successful partnerships and what the advantages are for our students. And so at this point, I would like to turn the microphone over to Superintendent Lester.
Thank you very much, Senator Rummel. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about this. You may recall that last year I was testifying for something else and actually talked about this concept. So, you know, I have lots of facts, but I understand I don't have much time, so I'll get right to the point. We have over 100 partners. We have well over 100 programs before, during, and after school weekends that we're doing to provide for kids. And we're doing that with one paid employee more than we had in the past. The rest of the programs are self-funded by the partnerships or maybe a program we already had in place or grants. And so I just want to stress that the project manager is that one paid employee, and that's one of the things in the grant. If we had that, those are dollars and we can put back into the other programs. You know, just the whole concept of community schools is one that's catching on, and we're seeing that in work. And I give you an example. We had a therapist working with a student in our health resource area, and the social worker was there, the parent was there. We're seeing more parent involvement, by the way. Tons more parents in the last year than we've ever had, and was working. The student was not taking her medication. She was on a Prozac or something. And she was not taking it because it was making her ill and irritable, and she was acting out in school and whatever. And they couldn't get in to see their psychiatrist for months, apparently. They walked across the hall to a physician. The physician prescribed a new drug. I mean, did a little research, prescribed a new drug. And that same day, within 15 minutes, she got a new drug. And in that time, that student has had no discipline issues, is functioning in the classroom, and is functioning at home and in the community. Now, that was a partnership that happened because we co-located. We didn't pay for any of that, but we provided that opportunity. There are examples all over the place with a county that has maybe three workers in a family working with them, and the school has a social worker and who knows who else, the probation officer or whatever. And with this kind of communication working together, we see that limiting that down to maybe one social worker and the like working. So, you know, we've been doing it, and all I can tell you is that we have seen, you can talk about all the research you want, but we've seen our attendance improve, especially the kids we're working with. We have, our mobility rate 4 years ago was 33%. It's 26% now. Last year, 75% of our seniors graduated and went on to post-secondary. All of our seniors graduated, for that matter, that were there last year. But 75% went on to post-secondary, and we're on track for the same thing. We're seeing the results that you hear about in the research, and we expect that we're going to see a lot more. In fact, we're anticipating some fairly large gains in the academic performance, too. If you free teachers to teach, they'll do the job. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
And then we have Dr. Lovett from the White Bear Lake Area Schools.
Welcome, Dr. Lovett.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, 3 weeks ago I was before you testifying on a bill that would give local school boards more authority to extend current referendum levies without raising taxes. This morning's bill also rests on one of the three core values I cited in that testimony: quality education for all students. The bill just introduced by Senator Rummel would create pilot sites, as she described, to demonstrate new strategies for building broad community support for all children in all families. In a moment, Principal Barb Kern from White Bear Lake's Willow Lane Elementary School will describe what our community school might look like under this concept. Before she presents, I would like to note three principles that I think are important for partnerships and really have relevance here. First, within our community, our common agenda must be the education and welfare of all children. Secondly, leaders and all citizens must believe that it is within our power to nurture dreams and to build skills and confidence in every child. And third, we must do whatever it takes. Barb will describe some partnerships already in place, including those with the White Bear Lake YMCA and the White Bear Center for the Arts. In each of these cases and others, the community started with the premise that our common agenda was children. Leaders and ordinary citizens developed a vision of what we could do together, even if every previous attempt had failed. And then with creativity and dedication and commitment, got the job done. So if we're already building partnerships, why are we in front of a legislative committee on this Wednesday morning? Is it the money? Well, yes, in part, but only in part. Just as a farmer needs seed corn in order to plant and eventually harvest, some modest seed money can really help us get things going. It is also about your support and encouragement to help us pursue more active partnerships, more creative partnerships, in a decade when we all know funds are going to be very scarce. We're basically asking you to consider being part of the team, to endorse the concept, and to help us do whatever it takes to provide quality education for all students.
Thank you. Senator Fulby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and you'll be just so shocked by my comments this morning. Thank you, superintendents, for being with us. Superintendent Lester worked with a group from the Humphrey Institute that I was part of their fellowship program on this subject, and so have worked on this in the past. Just wanted to know if either of you are aware of any schools in Greater Minnesota that may be ripe for something. Superintendent Lester used to be up at Mora, and just wonder if you know of any schools. I love the concept. I think it's key. I think there's for years I've thought the disconnect between the healthcare community and education was so key, and now we're getting that piece of it seems, and we need to go further. So just curious to know if you know of anyone in Greater Minnesota that is looking at this. I believe probably Grand Rapids, Senator Saxog's district with the Blandin Foundation, possibly.
I know of
Superintendent.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I've had very preliminary discussions with the superintendent in Little Falls because he's curious. Size-wise, it seems to make sense. It's outstate. You know, it is a community, if you will. You know, the traditional type community. So we've had discussion like, okay, he's interested, and I've told him some things, and now we're going to meet and try to move forward. I think we'll see more of that. I've had, you know, small things. This is the only one I can speak to that I can definitely tell you I've had a discussion with someone about.
Senator Bonhoff?
Where's she done?
Mr. Chair and colleagues, certainly I considered how we could get a rural, a suburban, and an urban so that we would have three different models. I did not have anybody that I could turn to find the rural, because the idea of this community-centered school works differently in each type of community. The beauty of this is that it fits the community resources with the needs of the community, much the way the Blandin Foundation has worked. And I really would expect that their information will supplement what we're doing here. again, the focus of the bill is to learn how to create the successful partnerships as well as to create, to gather more data. There's tons of data nationally that this is a successful program, but how does it look in Minnesota? We do have one testifier.
Senator Saltzman?
Or Senator Bonner, did you have a question,
Senator? Or Senator Bonner first. Okay. I can't remember who asked the last one. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rummel and Dr. Lester, we had the occasion during the interim to go and tour your school with Senator Scheid as well, and I was so impressed by the learning environment. It wasn't just the community school that was impressive. It was that, you know, every student there was so engaged in learning, and they were, you know, teaching us how to use the multimedia equipment. It was as though that school was on fire. So whatever you're doing is working, and I thank you for being here this morning and for your commitment to those kids.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Lester.
Just one quick comment. I just lost it here. Oh, I know. Another big advantage, obviously, is one, we pilot, we do it. But the other is that we make ourselves available to help other people. It's one thing to say, we tried it, we did it, and so why don't you try it? And it's another to say, we tried it, we did it, it worked, and how can we help you do it too? And I see that as a big part when I talked with Senator Rummel originally, was we have to make sure there's a dissemination piece in this so that it doesn't stop at White Bear Lake and Brooklyn Center.
Senator Saltzman.
Senator, just follow up, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rummel, have you looked at, or might you look at, the work that was done in, like, I believe 1994 with the Family Collaborative Centers through the Pew Foundation? I know that there was a major effort between, you know, school districts, the Department of Health in St. Paul, the Wilder Foundation in getting this grant. And there was significant work done to try to create, you know, to use schools as the basis for this. And I know that sort of feels like it fell apart or something. It didn't, and I think funding was probably part of it. But to look at why, what was successful there and how to build on that, perhaps?
Senator Saltzman, I've read a ton of research on this, and I can't really speak particularly to that. There has been a renewed interest in community-centered school in the last 5 to 7 years, and it's growing exponentially. And I think it's because I think people are beginning to realize that the core mission of the schools is academics, but there are other opportunities and access needs of some students that should be taken care of. And it looks like the best way to take care of it is in the context of a shared relationship in the community. I'd like to if I could, Mr. Chair, ask Principal Kern to talk about her thoughts about what she might do with this grant to give the members a clearer picture of where we'd like to go. And then, Mr. Chair, I'd like to add a small oral amendment to the bill.
Okay. Ms. Curran, let the record reflect that there's a quorum. Ms. Curran?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Willow Lane School is on the southern end of the White Bear School District. We have 350 students. 60 of them are learning English as a second language. We have 18% mobility, which is the highest mobility in the district, and a free and reduced lunch percentage of 50%. Proudly, we can say that we were awarded the U.S. Department of Education Blue Ribbon Award in 2008 because we did better than 90% of all the schools in the district with the same demographics. And usually, both in math and literacy, are 10% ahead of what our target is on the MCAs. So with that in mind, what are the needs of our families? Many of our families are working 2 and 3 jobs just to make ends meet. Many of our families are living 2 to 3 families in an apartment together. They hardly see their children at all because they're too busy working. And some of the challenges come when there is paperwork to be done in order to get the services that might be available in the community. And they either don't have a car, they don't have transportation, and they can't get to where the services are. So that's just a little bit of the background. So what would we do? Well, when we dream, first of all, something small like having a washer and dryer at school so that the children would have clean clothes to wear during the day. We dream of hiring an individual to be our point of access person so that that individual would know about all the services that are available in the community and could assist families in accessing them, providing guidance through the paperwork and assisting with the phone calls. And then we'd like to offer English language and computer classes for our parents because that would really help them to be gainfully employed and to connect more completely with the community. We'd like to organize the dental services. In the past, we've tried to do this, but because of the paperwork, it's just not happening. And so we would like to have those dental services right on site at least once a month and to offer an array of school learning opportunities that are engaging and yet tied to the Minnesota standards for after school, free of charge to the students. And then we'd like to offer 3 weeks of classes in August with busing for students below the 40th percentile on the MCAs. And finally, I think the thing that we would really feel that we would have arrived is if twice a month we could take out a bus, bring families in, the whole family, to school, and in the morning the parents would have classes that would help them, English language classes, computer classes, whatever they felt that they needed. And the students would have 2 hours of enriching classes, and then they would have lunch all together as a family, do an activity as a family in the afternoon at school, and then go home with a bag of groceries for their Sunday dinner. Those are some of the things that we envision that would really, really bring the families closer together and build those trusting relationships with the school, help grow the parents, grow the children, and make our school truly the center of the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kern.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer
Senator Rummel
an oral amendment to the bill. This is the first time the bill is being heard. And on page 2, line 3, after the words, "but not limited to," insert the words, "how to develop successful community partnerships." I think pertinent to Senator Salzman's question, that is one of the things, and as I've talked and visited with Superintendent Lester over the months, he can tell us many stories about what works and what doesn't work. The point of this pilot is to get that information down on paper and down in a way that we can disseminate it for others who might be interested in pursuing partnerships with their community.
Senator Salzman.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair, you know, my comment earlier was to help with if I could help connect with some of the people who we worked with in 1994, because there was a lot of work done. And I think as I heard you explain this, those were the same things that were going on. And it was not to suggest that it didn't work. It just something didn't, it wasn't able to be maintained for whatever reason. But I think there was a lot of good work done. It might be able to build on what they found successful, where their barriers were. And, you know, I think to, like, you know, Senator, that when we talk about, you know, diversity also, Senator Ray always brings that up, and that there was a lot of work done to make sure that the people planning it were included. So that was one of the things I think that was very important. So I'd be happy to try to remember who those folks were. They probably retired and moved on, but I'm sure we could find some of those folks because it was really a neat
Mr.
Neat
Chair?
Project.
Mr. Lester?
Yes.
Dr. Lester.
Thank you. The Achievement Plus schools are still going, mm-hmm. and we've spent a lot of time with them and have gotten a lot of valuable information. Mm-hmm. Linnell Teal was the one that we've spoken a lot with, and you know, not the difference. I mean, they are the perfect example. They're inner city. What we're trying to do here in this bill, and what we're is, can it be done in secondary? Can it be done on a district wide basis? And can it be done in a suburban school district rather than more inner city related, which then ties us to your question about going out into the community? So they're still active. They've been a great help. And a lot of what we're doing is based on the support they've given us.
That's Just one more question, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. Is the A-team based in your district, Mr. Lester?
The who?
The A-team.
No.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. We have another question, but we also have Senator Rummel's amendment. So, Senator Terezre, is your question to the amendment? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, is an answer to this question that we're talking about. Senator Saltzman and Senator Rummel, I was very involved in that process as well, and I just happened to have the report that is about 450 pages. It's called Connect, and I will be happy to give it to you. It's a report this big that was produced and out of those efforts. I have a theory about why it didn't happen the way we envisioned it at the time, and my theory is that we had a lot of resources and people were not interested in sharing. We have a different time today, and your timing is very clever, Senator Rummel. We need to do this today simply because we do not have the resources that we had in 1994. We must do this today because counties and school districts and clinics and all of these programs just simply cannot afford to work in the fragmented way that they used to. So that's one issue. And the second one is that in order for this to work, you need to be able to really build these partnerships, and it needs to come from the community. You need to ask for this. It cannot be done the other way. We cannot impose this as the legislature on you. It has to come from the community, and I think this is exactly what you're asking. So I think this is a very different approach. In 1994, we did it top-down. We put a report. We hired consultants that were not even from Minnesota, by the way, and say, this is the way you do it. Just go ahead and do it, and this is the model. And people say, I don't think that's going to work here. And we have some collaborative efforts in rural Minnesota. So I applaud your efforts, Senator Rummel, because I think this is the way to do it, and this is the time to do it.
Thank you, Senator Esrae. On Senator Rummel's amendment on page 2, line 2.3, after limited to insert how to develop successful partnerships.
Community partnerships.
Community partnerships.
Okay. Comma.
Comma. On that amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. I have some questions on, and I think what Senator Therese Ray mentioned is very important. When you look at the legislation, what, and I've been trying to think about exactly what elements in that legislation could the school district not do right now? I mean, what would you need authority for from the legislature to do that you currently don't have? And obviously, I think there's a couple. One is the start of the school year. Before Labor Day, I mean, that one is not available. And the other one, I think, is the money. But so, I guess the outcome would be, how do you take a successful school, excuse me, like you have or like you're going to develop, and share it with others so that that can be multiplied across different communities. And that's certainly a very worthwhile effort, I think. It seems like the real heartbeat of this whole thing is the community leaders, the individuals that actually are, you know, taking this on, the ability for the different services to you know, maybe pull up stakes and have an office in the school or work together. I mean, I can think back a number of years ago, and we tried, and Senator Olson, I'm sure, remembers this, and maybe some others do, we tried to bring components of health and human services together with education and health. And my gosh, you'd think a World War III broke out. I mean, because we had these individual silos that everybody operated in. And it was very difficult. And we had some success, but not a whole lot. And what this is doing is it's kind of doing it at a community level. The only example I can think of is when the school in New Folden, which is in my district, burned down. Somebody left the coffee pot on overnight, it shorted out and burnt the whole school down. And the department wasn't going to approve the rebuilding of the school. We had most of it was covered by insurance. But then we convinced the department, this is back in quite a few governors ago, but we convinced the department that it was worthwhile. What we would do would be to we didn't put the post office, but we put everything else in the community except the post office in the community. Senior center, the whole works. In case the school didn't survive, at least we could use it for something else. And it has. It's been an excellent school. I think the community felt they had to really take it on. I mean, they just came behind that school, and even to this day, they're very supportive. So it's really the individuals, and how do you get that kind of participation and commitment and stuff. So I guess it's not a question or anything, except, I'm not sure. I'd like to see us somehow tie it to some real outcome like the race to the top, an alternative, but I think that's a federally determined criteria. I don't think we're going to be able to change it from the state level. I would like to see it be an option for, let's say, a turnaround school. I mean, it would be a whole lot, I think, better than some of the options they currently have. But I think that's also a federally determined criteria. But it doesn't mean that we, the senators around this table couldn't write to a joint letter to the Secretary of Education and suggest that something like a turnaround or community school or a community center school couldn't be an option. So, I mean, there's maybe some other things that we could do. But anyway, that was just my thoughts. And I guess on line 1.9, it seems like maybe you don't want to mention whether you need one building or two buildings or three buildings. I mean, you have the authority as a school district to do whatever you want, put it wherever you want, and that gives you more flexibility. I think just not mentioning anything there would be better. And on the race to the top, I'm not sure what, Subdivision 4 does anything. Senator Rummel?
Mr. Chair, I would certainly be amenable to any suggestions that you make. I, too, had questions about Subdivision 4, and we could easily omit that. And we could omit, as you said, on line 1.9, the specifications of where the locations is. To respond to your comments of what does this bill do that they couldn't do without the bill, and frankly, it does come because at this time, these two school districts that I know of have taken some leadership in starting these partnerships, but they are, as we all know, all our school districts, with the shifts, the various shifts, and the likelihood of flat or even lower school funding, to be able to continue the work, and it does take extra work to, one, create the partnerships and make sure that they're sound and sustainable, and then, two, to engage the parents who would use the resources that are brought to the school to come and access them. So, for example, if we had dental services at a school location, it takes an effort then to inform parents and to get them used to the fact that they can access those things. So those are two things that would add work to the school district for which they don't have the personnel to do it. So basically what this does is give them the added resources they need to pursue these partnerships and then give us the information that's needed so that we as policymakers might want to consider whether or not this is a direction that might be something we encourage across the state. Okay. I don't know if Dr. Lester or Dr. Lovett or Superintendent Lester wanted to comment on what this does that they can't do so far.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Lester.
I can say that I think you've heard from me before, you know, if you build it, they will come, and we're going to do it whether or not, because we've already started. We took a leap of faith, and we hired a full-time coordinator. I'm pretty much the district administration in Brooklyn Center these days, and I was doing this on my own, and frankly, I was having a ball, but it got a whole lot bigger than one person can handle. You need someone that's focusing on that, that can get out and build those partnerships, can monitor those partnerships. You know, the only problems you'll ever have is when they want to creep back into their silos, and you need someone that's there chipping away, reminding them that there was an agreement. We've got this. So that the money part, the project manager is crucial. Once again, we'll do it, but it would be real helpful to us, especially if we're going to take this someplace else.
Right.
Who's going to take it out to disseminate if we don't have someone that's designated to do just that?
And Mr. Chair, if we can demonstrate that we improve student achievement, I mean, that's the whole goal of this. If we can demonstrate that we improved student achievement without adding significantly to the financial investment in our schools, that would be a great piece of information to bring to the community and to our table. Dr.
Do either of your the school districts currently use growth assessments?
Yes, internally, certainly, Senator. That's an important part of what we're doing, and we're looking at the state models. But that's a critical part of what we're doing.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of questions with regard to the actual bill language. It says $150,000 for a grant to White Bear Lake for an early education classroom. I know there's so many of our school districts that would like to have that, and so I'm wondering about putting that in the bill, whether or not this is the appropriate purpose for that. And I'm wondering, how about your building lease levy that you have now? Couldn't you direct that money towards that? Why? What is your thinking about that?
Dr. Lovett.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what we're doing right now is to use partnerships to do what we would not otherwise be able to do. For example, at Willow Lane Elementary, we have a couple of different partnerships with the YMCA. The YMCA is about four blocks away, but we have two important partnerships. One is that we're leasing space to create an early a preschool program run by the Y using some of our classroom space. We also have a partnership with the Y that allows the children at Willow Lane and our other elementary schools to have access to the swimming pool at the YMCA. That's a longer story. We have a number of other partnerships in process. One of the things that these funds would do would allow us to expand the space and use it a little bit differently. Could we use our alternative facilities funding for that? Yes, we could. It's already spoken for, and that's one of the challenges in lean times, that you can only use money once. And one of the things that I think this does is allows us a little bit that we don't have to take from something else. I've been pretty clear to our community that we're going to continue to innovate and find ways to get better, but the way we will get resources to do that is to stop doing something else that we're doing. I wanted to make a point on a question that was asked earlier regarding rural schools and other school districts. The White Bear Lake schools presented at the Minnesota School Board Association in a roundtable format in January. We were interested in sharing what we had learned through four critical partnerships over the last couple of years. We thought other districts might be interested as well. We had 20 school districts represented coming to roundtable sessions, superintendents and school board members. And what was interesting to us is that they all had different questions about partnerships. They had different ways of approaching it. They were trying things. And one of the most challenging impediments that they ran into was building a trusting relationship with municipalities, with healthcare, with counties. When things haven't been done before, it takes a while for people to get used to the idea of doing it. So certainly part of what we're trying to do in White Bear Lake and in Brooklyn Center is to make it work for our communities, but we really want to take the lessons that we're learning and share it with others to show that it can be done elsewhere. If that makes sense, we were surprised by the number of school districts that are eager to do it but feel it's just an uphill battle. So small amounts of money that we don't have to allocate from other programs or reallocate, and a little bit of attention that says this is important and the legislature really wants to be a partner.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, either of the superintendents, how best do you think you could measure whether or not what you're doing is increasing student achievement?
Either one of you.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Lester.
I would say that you were talking about the turnaround schools. At Brooklyn Center High School is one, and if you look at what's happening in Brooklyn Center High School, as Senator Bonhoff kindly said, it's crazy. It's growing, and it's growing, and we're starting to see that. You know, our growth data right now is telling us that we're going from it's 18 to 20% of our 11th graders to about 45 to 50%. The data says that that's where it's going to go when we get to the MCAs. We'll see what happens. But I think that will be a part of it then when we see that, because our after-school program, we have half of our kids in both buildings after school in programs, and a lot of it, especially at the elementary, is YMCA run like a Beacons program. And so we're going to see some academic achievement. But I mentioned mobility. And, you know, and if you've got them in school and they're not moving around, they're going to learn better, too. So it's going to have to be tied. Attendance is a good thing. Behavior is another one. The girl with the Prozac, it's no longer an issue. And it was, you know, so some of those things are hard to measure, but others are very obvious. And I think you will see scores go up, the academic achievement, but in more than just the MCAs. And I think you'll see other factors that affect that will improve, too. And we are seeing those things already. If I could, I forgot we presented at MSBA also on community schools, and the schools that came up to talk to us were rural schools saying, how do you do that? When we try to work with another agency, they turn us away or they're not interested, which again comes back to the purpose of this particular bill. As for the early childhood part, we're partnering with Terry Rose, who was a researcher at the U of M. And she developed a program called Baby Space, and it approaches early childhood and infancy, actually, from the point of view of the child, from a mental health point of view, as well as a developmentally appropriate in other areas point of view. She has one or two sites now. One is in the Little Earth neighborhood in Minneapolis. This is going to be a nationwide effort, and there are four of us that are going to be her replication sites. And what we would do with this, I talked about developmentally appropriate and mental health appropriated. The Science Museum designed the space for Baby Space. And so when you see the space, it's fascinating. There are tunnels and caves and ramps and mirrors and the kinds of things that children, you know, I mean, proven, research-proven things that help the development of children. And we think and that is going to be a model site, too. I think when you put it together with a comprehensive early childhood program and the whole community schools program, you're going to see something that looks like the Harlem Children's Zone, but different, because it doesn't all have to be the same. It has to be what you can afford, and you rely on partnerships more, so... That's what we would do with the money, because the space to remodel is not just put up some walls and make sure you have a restroom. It's caves and tunnels and ramps and all of those things, too. So.
Okay, Dr. Levitt?
In addition to what Superintendent Lester has said, I'd like to add one other measure, and that is the measure, the extent to which children are getting engaged in school activities and other activities in the community, and that is measurable. Some of these other prerequisites for the stability of the family are essential, for example, for students to feel confident enough that they can get involved in the orchestra, which is another partnership we're developing at Willow Lane and with some other partners. That is, if you're struggling with these other issues, you're just not as likely to get engaged. I want to finish with a story, and then I'll rest my observations here. One of the comments that I remember Barb Kern told me the first week I started as a superintendent is that for some of these children, they haven't learned how to dream. They go day by day struggling to make it in a family situation that is difficult. Their parents love the kids, but the kids are going so day to day on things that they haven't learned to look ahead. We had a group of high school students, of juniors and seniors, who, when they heard that story 1 year ago, decided to do something about it. In over a six-month period, they developed what they've called CAMP, a mentoring program, a cross-age tutoring program. In January, after about 3 months of training, they started, 40 high school students started a mentoring program with 40 fifth graders at Willow Lane Elementary. This is a pilot within a pilot. And it's remarkable because what it's really doing is it's a part of this big picture of community commitment to all children. And so the answer to the other question is yes, MCA scores and other scores, attendance, lack of mobility, we can measure those things. But we can also measure the increase in student engagement. That is so that they have something that they can look forward to, something that they can get better at, and that really supplements their academic progress.
Thank you. Maybe I can ask staff to kind of go through some of the changes that I have suggested and see what the committee thinks.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 1.9, delete everything after 2013. That would be, and may be located in a single building or in two or more buildings. And then on line 1.14, after the period, insert, and it would be new language, but I'm going to read it from lines 2.6 to 2.8. The language would be, community-centered schools pilot projects must also agree to work with other school districts throughout the state to provide information about the project under this section. That would move that working with other school districts to the programmatic part of the language, and then also keep it in the reporting language. And then on line 119, delete subdivision 4. And then on line 2.2, delete 2015 and insert 2014. That would give the community center schools 6 months to report instead of a year and a half.
Senator Rummel?
2.2.
Mr. Chair, I agree with those amendments and changes.
Okay. On those, Senator Rummel moves those changes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. The I do have to remind committee members that we do have a tight budget and we'll be asked to reduce it somewhat. So, given the light of what we're trying to do, we have constraints, but and once we find out everything, we can kind of figure out how this fits in. So, but it was very interesting, and I think it's something that
should be pursued. I really do. I think the education community that you're building is one that I think a lot of school districts would like. Senator Roblin. Senator Roblin.
Thank you. I just have a question, and you mentioned this, Senator Stumpf, about the idea that they might not be able to have their summer school program in August because it might be considered the start of the new school year and it would fall with outside the parameters. And I'm just wondering, is that necessarily the case if they call it summer school? Do we say when districts can only hold summer school? Because now they mainly hold it in June, which when I heard that, it really struck me that August is an ideal time to take students who are struggling, because if they have it in June and then you release them for 2 months, they forget everything. But if you put it in August, then you have the opportunity to give them a head start and a catch-up time before the next group of students comes in. And I thought, well, it just makes so much sense, but why do we always have summer school in June instead of later in the summer? And is it because of the law, or just because staff likes to stay on and not and get their break then? And maybe I don't know. I mean, why do we have summer school immediately after school ends?
Senator Colt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry I just got here.
Oh, did you want to answer Senator Roebling's question?
Or? Oh no, sorry, okay, I have no answer right to that, Senator Roebling.
Is it because of the way the fiscal year is, or what would preclude them from having summer school in August instead of June?
Who's our expert on?
Got a Labor Day start.
I have no idea.
Summer school isn't Labor Day start.
Labor Day start.
It isn't.
Mr. Chair and committee.
Ms. Curran.
Historically, we had offered summer school 2 weeks in June and 2 weeks in August, and we came to the same conclusion that you were just commenting on, that it would be far better to have 3 weeks in August because it would really give them that jump start. And actually, the money that comes from the state for targeted services can fund the staffing. It's the busing that's the challenge, because in the past, the students that are able to, we invite everyone that's 40th percentile and below. But unless they have a car, they don't get there. And that's the challenge. So we can fund the teacher hours, the tutoring hours, and the building is ready for them. It's just the busing part of it, because then the kids will come.
What difference does that make?
Senator Roblin?
Mr. Chair, but do you have busing in June?
No, I mean, we just haven't had any busing, but I'm just referring back to what I had said earlier, which was to have the 3 weeks of tutoring in August with busing.
Okay. And Mr. Chair,
Senator Roblin.
Another question. I'm assuming that your districts get integration aid, correct? Are they eligible? And, you know, one of the things that we did put in there is that integration aid can be used for closing the achievement gap. And I was sitting here listening, and I do agree that if you get families involved with their students more and with school, that you will have a better chance of closing the achievement gap. And so when you have, you know, this idea of bringing them together and sharing, what do you use your integration aid for now? Because I think that would be an eligible use of inviting people together for classes, and maybe even a shared meal might fall into that, because you would be bringing different minority groups together and with everybody. I mean, you would be inviting anyone who's struggling, would be my understanding. So could you funnel some of that funding into it, or how are you currently using that integration aid?
Mr. Chair?
Dr. Lester?
Yes, we are using it for that. And you probably don't want to get me going on integration revenue because of where Brooklyn Center sits in this, so I won't. But with our limited dollars, that's what we're using it for. We have it for parent activities. We have it for someone. We have two family resource rooms in the district, and one of them we are using that money to make sure that when our partners aren't there, someone else is there. So we're using what there is, but we pay a certain amount to Northwest Suburban Integration School District, and we've paid to WEMEP, and when what's left is what we're using.
Okay. Senator Culp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is off subject, but, and I just got here, and I apologize, but my question is for Mrs. Kern. Did you teach sixth grade at St. Francis Xavier in Buffalo?
Yes, and I thought I recognized you.
I'm sorry. Nice to see you.
And Senator Cook, wasn't she a terrific teacher?
She was, Senator Rummel, she was a fantastic teacher. I may not have been the best student.
If you could see Principal Kearns in her school, it is a sight to see. She is one of the most dynamic principals I've ever seen, and it shows in her school, too.
She lives in Maplewood.
Senator, Mr. Chair, do you want me to move the bill to be laid on the table for possible inclusion?
Yes, I think that would be appropriate. If there are no other questions, anyone else that wants to testify on it? Or Senator Rummel?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 2943 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the education finance.
And that is as amended.
As amended. Thank you.
On Senator Rummel's motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Senator Rummel and those. Senator, I think it's Senator Saltzman, if that's all right.
Okay. That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Chair. I'm here today with Senate File 3000. I believe there is an amendment that I would like to move. This is its first stop.
Senator Saltzman has the A1 amendment, and that's being handed out. Senator Saltzman.
Darren, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. You know, I am here today with the Metro School for the Deaf and the Minnesota North Star Academy, which has recently moved. They are two charter schools, and they serve students who are hearing impaired. And 100% of their students are on special education funding, and so they have had some unique issues regarding funding with the unallotment and a merger, and we've been working on this issue since last fall. And I do want to just note that they have an incredible school board. They are truly a community-based board. The president of the board is from my district and has had a history family members who have been hearing impaired. And so I just want to just note that their school board is really terrific and advocates so much for this school. I know that some of you visited the school this last summer, and I believe in your packet, which is being handed out, you will have a list of the students and where they come from. So this school really serves districts from across the area, and it's a very unique program and serves the students very well. So I would like Ms. Sherman, first of all, who is the school director, to really talk a little bit more about the problem. We also have Justin Testerman here today, who is an authorizer for the school, and then Allie Porter and Matt Wellstad, who are seniors. And I think it's important to hear a little bit about how the school serves their students so very well. I think we've had testimony before on some issues regarding the school and transportation, and so I think it's really great to have students here today. So maybe we should start.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman. Ms. Sherman, or Sherwood?
Sherwood. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I would really like to thank Senator Saltzman for all of her help with our bill going forward, and also to Senator Gerlach, who has also been instrumental in moving this bill forward. It's a very important piece of legislation, and it will help our school tremendously if we can get it passed in order to survive. I'm the founder and one of the school administrators at Metro Deaf School, Minnesota North Star Academy, and we serve deaf and hard of hearing students from the greater Twin City area and western Wisconsin. Metro Deaf School opened in 1993, so we're considered quite old as a charter school. In 2004, Minnesota North Star Academy, a deaf and hard of hearing high school, which is also a charter school, was established. That school was partially funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. During the 2008-2009 school year, the boards of both schools decided to merge in order to become one, and so our costs would become more effective to our school districts. We currently serve approximately 100 students, preschool through 12th grade, from 39 school districts. I'm here today because of the serious cash flow problem that our school is experiencing. We need legislation for it to be resolved. Prior to 2006, the school could easily manage its cash flow. Resident districts were billed directly, and the school was paid with relatively few glitches. We were able to utilize a small line of credit to maintain cash flow at that time. Since 2007, the billing process has changed because the state law has centralized the process, and we bill MDE. We have to appeal to get some of our costs covered. The change has resulted in the school having more difficulty with our cash flow. This school year, we had a $500,000 delay in payment during the first 6 months of 2010 school year. And this, in combination with the 27% shift, has caused a cash flow crisis, and we have had to take out $700,000 in a line of credit with a $4 million budget. Yesterday, we had a meeting, or 2 days ago, we had a meeting with the MDE to deal with the problems related to the appeal process and develop a plan to improve the billing and reimbursement system that we both believe will lead to more regular payments. The cash flow problem remains for the 27% shift, plus fluctuations that may occur with reimbursements in the appeal process. We have no capacity to build a reserve fund to manage our cash flow because of our unique funding model. We are asking for legislation because, first of all, charter schools cannot levy for additional funds. Secondly, more than 84% of our students are placed there by their resident district, with only 16% of the students placed there by their parents. Therefore, less than 2% of our revenue is general education aid. The cost of paying for loan fees and our 6% interest rate for our line of credit is not sustainable. None of these costs are reimbursable. And since these interest payments are not reimbursable, they are funds that are diverted away from our educational mission. We are in good standing with the MDE. We provide our students with a communication-rich environment, and our students are succeeding. In fact, researchers make requests to study what we do. We are seen as a model for the rest of our country, yet our school could close in the future because of our cash flow crisis. Without a change in the law, the school will no longer be able to exist, and this would be devastating to our students, our families, staff, and the school districts placing their students with us because of the substantial cost of replicating a program back in their home school districts. We ask that you please support Senate File 3000 to allow us to effectively manage our cash flow and let our school continue on with its good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sherwood. We have someone else that would like to share some comments.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Testerman, and I am the Director of Education Programs for Volunteers of America of Minnesota, the school's authorizer. We were the nation's first nonprofit authorizer and oversee 14 schools around the state. Our program was one of 8 high-quality authorizers in the nation recognized by the U.S. Department of Education in 2007 in their publication, Supporting Charter School Excellence Through High-Quality Authorizing. Volunteers of America of Minnesota was the original authorizer of Minnesota North Star Academy and took over as authorizer for Metro Deaf School in 2008 when the two schools merged. These schools truly offer a one-of-a-kind education opportunity for deaf and hard of hearing students and their families, the opportunity to learn in a bilingual, bicultural environment without having to leave their families for a boarding school. It is truly inspiring to visit the school and see students thriving for the first time in their lives in a school that is built specifically around their needs. And in a moment, you'll hear from Matt and Allie about how important that is. Both schools have remained in good standing during their time in our oversight and offer an exemplary education with strong leadership and governance. Each year, Volunteers of America of Minnesota recognizes our schools with awards for excellence in academics, financial management, and governance. Last year, we awarded Metro Deaf School Minnesota North Star Academy the Excellence in Governance Award in recognition of the thoughtful and effective efforts of the boards in navigating the difficult and complex task of merging the two schools. These schools have managed to become models of excellence in their field and have done so within a very complex and challenging funding model. Now, all of the 14 schools that we authorize are struggling with the increased holdback, as are all public schools. But this school, because of the circumstances that Sherwood explained earlier, it truly is unique and deserves some special consideration. We support this bill because it will provide the school with the necessary resources to continue their excellent program and mitigate the expensive borrowing that they've had to do so far for cash flow purposes. We thank you for your time and consideration.
Okay, thank you.
We also have, there are two students here, and I'd like to pass the microphone over to our interpreter so that they may also address the audience. So, Allie, would you like to start?
If you could give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, hi, my name is Allison Porter. I live in Minneapolis, and I attend the Metro Deaf School Minnesota North Star Academy in St. Paul. I'm a senior there. I transferred to this school my freshman year, and I really think that this school has the best communication access and the best education. And the reason is because it's a bilingual school. So American Sign Language and English are both taught as equal languages, and all classes have teachers who are fluent in American Sign Language. And the teachers are always there to help me. They're supporting and just encouraging everyone. So any kind of problems we have, we can just talk to our teachers directly. Our school has many great opportunities, just like any other high school. We're involved in theater, we're involved in sports, and this spring we finally get to have our prom in our own gym. Last year we didn't have that opportunity because we didn't have our own gym. We had to share it with other people, so it's very exciting. And it's really important because this is a day school, so we don't have to live in a dormitory. So we go home at night and we can be with our families and just be in the comfort of our own home. And that way we have time to get together with our families in the evening and, you know, kind of have a family life as well as having a school life. I really doubt that any of my friends would want to go back to their home high schools if our school closes because there's just no communication there. So we just really feel lucky to have our school open and accessible. And we really need your help. Because of its cash flow problem, it may have to close. So please support Senate File 3000, and thanks so much for all the hard work you do for us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Senator. Hello, my name, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Matthew Wellstad, and I live in Roseville for the school year, but my home is actually in Silver Bay, Minnesota. Quite far up north. Yes. And I attend Metro Deaf School Minnesota North Star Academy. I'm a junior there now. And I transferred to this school during the middle of my sophomore year. And the reason that I transferred was because basically I'd grown up for 13 years being mainstreamed. So I was in classes with all hearing students. And communication was just really difficult, and I felt like I wasn't receiving a balanced education. So I came to this school because I wanted to improve my English and have access to communication in all my classes. So this school's really helped me improve my academics, especially in English, and I'm also developing leadership skills at the school. In my former school, I couldn't do that because I was the only deaf student, and so being a leader was difficult. For now, for example, I'm now a delegate for Minnesota's chapter of the Junior National Association of the Deaf. And my school also has team sports and clubs, just like any other high school. So there really isn't any difference for that kind of environment. It's really important for our school to survive. We really would just hate for it to close. The school has a heartwarming atmosphere, excellent education, and great social opportunities. There really isn't any other school I could go to where I could have other deaf friends and be able to talk with everybody. And if this school were closed, I just can't imagine that I would want to go back and be the only deaf student in my home high school. It would be really lonely. So I really ask you to support Senate File 3000, Metro Deaf School, Minnesota North Star Academy needs your help. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What wonderful testimony. Ms. Porter, I'm especially happy that you get to have your gym for prom because we all remember our high school proms, and it is a wonderful thing. Senator Saltzman, I do support the bill, but I just have a couple comments. You brought this forward for this charter school, but they're not the only ones in this situation. I have Lionsgate that I went and saw because they're a school that primarily serves students with autism, and I had that person come and testify before the committee that this payment deferment is very difficult for schools that primarily have special ed student populations because those have to be, those services have to be paid for at that moment. They cannot, you know, defer paying those people who deliver those services. So I actually have a question for the department because I'm a little bit annoyed in some respect that the governor chose within his unallotment authority, and I have that language, that notwithstanding any other law to the contrary, the commissioner is empowered to defer or suspend prior statutorily created obligations, which would prevent affecting such reductions. So that is within the governor and the administration's purview. But then we are being asked to change our law with regard to how we dole out payments to fix that problem. Couldn't the governor just choose to make this fix on his own, or couldn't the commissioner make that fix? Couldn't the commissioner carve out this situation where you have charter schools that have a primarily special ed population so that we aren't being asked to create a fix in statute that is in response to administrative act?
We have somebody here from the department.
Right. That would be helpful, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Hawkinson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
I'm sorry.
Lisa Barnage with the Department of Education. And we actually were trying to have this conversation on the side here, and we are not sure what the governor's authority are to the unallotment. We do know that the department is unable to, although we can speed up payments, we are unable to do them beyond what is already appropriated, which is the 7327 shifts. However, we'd be willing to try to figure out what the answer is to your question.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Barnard, it seems to me that if the governor has the authority to defer the payments, that it would be within the governor's purview to determine which payments wouldn't be deferred, but I would appreciate if you could get back to the committee on that. And again, Senator Saltzman, I would in no way want to not do this fix should we find out the governor is not able to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman and then Senator Olson.
Right. On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, we have been working on this extensively. There have been major negotiations trying to find out exactly where the school is at because there was the merger and making sure that we have the figures correctly. And I think what, you know, myself is that as we hear these young people here today, it's that I would hate to leave session and not give them a sense of confidence. And again, a program that is so unique, and I know there are many, and we did look at this as there is a spreadsheet. I don't know if you have it, but we are paying for this by, you know, putting a little bit of a shift onto, you know, all the school districts. It would range from a dollar up to $300 total for the largest school district in the state. But those school districts, many of them also have students who attend this school. So we are providing a very unique, you know, environment that, you know, it may involve these school districts this year, you know, in the future, other school districts may want to take advantage of this very exceptional program. So it is a wonderful resource. So that's, I think, where there's a comfort level here that this particular school does not have to worry about that or finding out later. So I appreciate the question very much.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, I concur with you that these students, we should be able to take care of it this session. I'm just hopeful that we wouldn't have to make the change in law. So if we have to, so be it. And I commend you for the creative approach that you've taken to solve the problem.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I've got my head totally wrapped around this. If it's predominantly related to the shift, which was done by unallotment, and we actually made it permanent, put it in as a shift instead of unallotment, could we make exception for a certain criteria, if it's an entirely a special ed thing, within that shift on a little bit more generic basis that wouldn't, in a way that wouldn't have to affect everybody? I'm not sure. I need a little further help with this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I think I understand the question you're asking, and I guess the best analogy would be how we have we did it back in 2002 and 2003, school districts and charters that fell into the statutory operating debt scenario in the year preceding the initiation of the shift. We had some money set aside to, in effect, allow those school districts and charters to get paid on the 90-10 schedule instead of what was then an 80-20 schedule. It's my understanding that the governor's unallotment, in fact, mimicked that calculation by choosing those charters and school districts that fell into that circumstance under the unallotment process. Yes, we have some dollars carried in the unallotment calculations that reflect that the governor it's about $3.5 million to allow those districts and charters to continue to be paid on a 90-10 basis. So I don't want to say it's cherry picking. It's districts and charters that fall into a circumstance. Their cash flow is low, and that it was felt that there would be a deleterious effect for those districts and charters. So
Mr. Chair, did that provision have any impact on the Metro Deaf School? Did they qualify under that? And is there a problem beyond that, even with the 90-10, or that kind of?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, as I understand the issue with Metro Deaf, they're not in statutory operating debt, so there was no assistance provided under that language. The circumstance for Metro Deaf is that they are a heavily dependent special ed program, which is a cost reimbursement formula. So for them, they did not have a sufficient reserve, and perhaps they can speak to whether gaining loans, as districts and some other charters have done, was an option for them. But as a result, the cash flow was very tight, and they felt that it was necessary to look at a more formulaic fix to adjust for the gubernatorial unallotments.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Nauman, would that approach of allowing them under the umbrella of the statutory operating debt schools, would that provision work for them? That obviously it was a set aside. But that might be cleaner in terms of what the impact on other school districts is. Would that work?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I think it could work. In that particular case, what you're looking for is additional dollars. Mm-hmm. And I think what they were looking at here is an option that was zero cost to the state, recognizing the financial challenges that befall this committee. So by nicking all the other districts and charters a little bit, that allows them to see a improvement in their cash flow without a negative effect to the state bottom line.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Saltzman.
I would like to, has the A1 amendment been approved?
No, it hasn't.
Okay. So what I would like to do is move the A1 amendment, and then if that passes, to lay it on the table for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Before we do that, Dr. Melcher, do you have any comments on
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. Sorry, I wasn't here for all of the discussion on this issue. At the time that the governor was doing the unallotment back last year, I don't think that the extent of the cash flow issues for the Metro Deaf School were known. So the governor was attempting in the unallotment to mimic the results of the payment shift that had been included in bills that had gone through the legislature during the session, and those reflected the 7327 payment and also the adjustment for the schools in statutory operating debt. There was nothing in any of those bills that related to Metro Deaf at the time. The governor could have chosen to have done a provision for Metro Deaf that would have been 90-10 had he chosen to, as part of that unallotment process. Depending on the way you did that, it would have been between $600,000 and $1,000,001 of additional costs that would have had to have been factored somewhere else in the governor's unallotment process. At this point, it's kind of late to go back to the governor's unallotments, and it was only a temporary kind of issue. That just deals with this year and next year, and I think Metro Deaf is looking for a solution that would be more ongoing in terms of ensuring that they don't have some of these severe cash flow issues. So that's a little background on that.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair and Dr. Melcher, now that this issue has come to the forefront, would it be possible to make that fix, though, right now and take care of, just make them whole in terms of the 90-10, and then we could certainly, by end of session, look at crafting some language that would fix that for the future?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, it would be an issue for the for the governor's office to look at in terms of whether they wanted to go back and revisit the methodology that had been done to do the unallotments. I think the expectation now is during the midst of a legislative session, we'd be looking at the will of the legislature in terms of addressing some of these issues rather than having the governor going back and revisiting unallotments that were done during the summer. But certainly we can convey that question to the governor's office.
Dr. Melcher, does the agency support this approach?
Mr. Chairman, the agency doesn't have a position on the bill. The agency has worked with Metro Deaf to try to ensure that the amount that they're requesting is kind of enough but not more than they need to address some of the serious cash flow problems they have, and we did work with them on the amendment that you have in front of you to try to make the kind of projected treatment of Metro Deaf under this more similar to what was done earlier with school districts and charter schools that are in statutory operating debt. So the initial bill would have had about a $1.1 million impact, kind of moving money around. This is down to about $600,000, which is kind of more finely crafted to meet the actual cash flow needs of the school and also to ensure that there wasn't any greater impact on anybody else than was absolutely necessary. So the department does take a position one way or another, but we have worked with them to try to make it as workable as possible if the legislature were to decide to go forward with it.
Thank you, Senator.
So, Mr. Chair, on this.
Or Dr. Melcher. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Melcher. Oh, he escaped. Is the bill is applying to all of the cash flow relating to the shift, but also to special ed aid, is it not?
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, what the bill does is it would allow, with the amendment, it would allow the Metro Deaf to receive up to 90% of its special education aid instead of 73% of its special education aid during the current payment cycle, and it would allow the department to adjust the timing of the payments during the year. We already have actually authority to do the piece during the year, but it would also clarify a process for doing that. And then it, in order to allow Metro Deaf to be up to 90% on special education aid, it would pay the other schools, 89.9%.
percent of their special, or I'm sorry, 72.9% of their special education aid during the year. So there would be a slight reduction in the current payments of special ed aid to the other schools, and in order to cover that $600,000 that would be advanced to the Metro Deaf School. And the other way of doing it would have been to have come up with $600,000 of additional dollars in the fiscal 11 account, but that was not viewed as being a feasible solution given the current budget situation.
So Mr. Chair, the proposal then is applying only to the special ed aid, not to the regular basic education.
Mr. Chairman,
aid,
Senator
or
Olson,
is it dealing with both?
The original bill would have increased the aid for all of the accounts for Metro Deaf up to 90%, and in visiting with the school, we determined that if they just got the special ed part up to 90% and we kept the lease aid and the other pieces at 73%, they'd have enough money to get by. And so that's what accounts for the difference between the $1.1 million in the original bill and the $600,000 in this bill is it's limited to the special education account.
Okay, so Mr. Chair,
on that point.
0.2.
Do we have to? What would happen if we just did it on a one-time basis?
Mr. Chairman, if we, you could craft a bill that would either appropriates $600,000 in fiscal 10 to the school, and then in fiscal 11 there would be a savings of that amount. Then they'd have a cash flow problem in fiscal 11 that would have to be addressed. But that could be done to get through the 1 year. If you cross bienniums, then you've got an issue in terms of you haven't really balanced the budget in relation to the $1 billion shortfall that you've got for the current biennium.
So what you're saying is their situation can be accommodated by just moving back to the 90%, the special ed aid, and then you also have the flexibility of being able to pay that on a more of a current basis than a reimbursement basis? Did I understand that that payment schedule you do, the department has the authority to handle differently?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, under current law, the payment statute allows the department to make adjustments within a fiscal year as far as the timing of payments. So if a school district had an emergency need to have cash in October and we weren't scheduled to pay them until November, we have the authority now if we receive sufficient documentation to move a payment around from 1 month to another within the school year. It requires some pretty serious documentation on the part of the school, and it's not used very often, but we do have that ability. What we don't have the ability to do is to pay someone more than the statutory percentage. So we can't just arbitrarily decide we're going to pay them 74% or 90% during the current year because there's only enough appropriated to cover 73%.
But Mr. Chairman, I just wondered if there's a way, if you had any flexibility or if there's a way of the timing of those payments.
Yes.
More because they're having to pay it out and then having to report and get it back in, and that's cash flow.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, we have worked with the school to try to, we can do that on an estimated basis, and we have worked with the school to try to make sure there's better communication so that we know earlier what their needs are. Part of the reason for the slowdown in payments last fall was that we didn't have complete information. So, for example, we didn't have all the data we needed to approve the charter school lease aid until midway through the fall. So they didn't get their charter school lease aid payments until around Thanksgiving. We didn't have all of the teachers in special education listed on our database. So we only reimbursed 68% of the teachers that they've got the data submitted for. And there was an appeal process, and there was some problem in terms of the routing of the letter, and so we've kind of worked through that process, and we think we can work out a way of, and we do have flexibility to try to make sure those payments go out on a more timely basis. But without legislation or, as you point out, in this particular year, a decision by the governor to change the way he did the unallotment last year, we don't have any authority to pay more than 73%. We can move around the 73%, but we can't pay more than 73%. And so inevitably, they've got about a $300,000 cash flow problem in June because they've had to pay the teachers for the year, and they're not getting paid until October or something. They're 27%. That's the problem, and they don't have the fund balance to cover that float. So that's what's causing the problem.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Melcher. Senator Saltzman moves the A1 amendment. And any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Saltzman.
I'd like to move Senate File 3000 as amended to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Education Bill.
Okay, Senator Saltzman moves Senate File 3000 as amended to be laid on the table and for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Education Bill. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much. And to our students, I want to thank them again for coming today and testifying.
Senator Bonhoff. Senator, welcome, Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, members, and I'm seeing Senator Torres Ray over here. I know she too has a bill up, so we'll try and split our time, Senator Torres Ray. I'm conscious
Thank
of
you.
The timing.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, this morning I have a shared services bill before you, and I'm sure you all remember last year's shared services bills. So this year is a little bit different. And before I go through exactly what it is, I would just like to share about what happened last session briefly. When I put forward a bill that required all school districts to both use cooperative purchasing to the best of their ability and to work with a consultant so that regionally they could come together to develop the best plan to deliver the business services in a shared way, there was a lot of concern, and as you recall, you know, there's mostly concern and very little support. And so we did kind of an experiment over the interim, and I would like to thank staff for working with me during that time. And I actually see Mr. McHenry is in the room today, and Mr. Nauman came out to my area of town over the summer, and we pulled together superintendents from Wayzata, Hopkins, Orono, Osseo, Edina was invited, Robbinsdale, and you know that was even beyond my Senate district, and we asked them if they would be willing to meet for approximately 6 hours. We did 3 2-hour meetings. We were facilitated. We had a professional facilitator, and we explored how best we could use a shared services model, and I thought that if we could come up with something big, then I could bring that forward this session. And I came to a different conclusion at the end of those 6 hours. The conclusion I came to was that unless we did something voluntary, there was never going to be any movement in this area. That even though those superintendents were so generous with their time and spent the 6 hours, I could still feel that tension in the room of what are you going to do to us? What are you going to make me do? And so this session, and they were also saying, and, you know, what incentive are you going to give me? You know, how are you going to make this worth my while? And so I pretty much scrapped the whole last idea and have come forward with a different idea, saying, okay, I'll listen to you. Let's do this as a grant program. Let's say to be eligible, you have to have 5 or more districts come together with a plan. You have to demonstrate how you're going to save money, how it's going to enhance quality, and there's money available, $250,000 for doing all of this, but again, in order, it's competitive, so you have to be able to save the most amount of money to get it. And the other thing is, we know that there are so many challenges in greater Minnesota that we said 50% of this money had to be outside the seven-county metro. So that's basically what the bill does. And I'm here today with two people testifying in support of it, and one of them, Sandy Lewandowski, the superintendent of Intermediate School District, she and I have been talking all during this time because Ms. Lewandowski also is passionate about the benefit of shared services and, in fact, has some very interesting research-based evidence to support this initiative. And so I'm pleased to have her here. And then also Ms. Judy Johnson, who's the government affairs director from Twin West Chamber of Commerce. I've been receiving a lot of support, excuse me, from the business community around this whole notion because I think so many have come together during this time of fiscal difficulties to realize we have to do business differently. And so the Twin West Chamber has been a leader in pushing towards that effort. I don't know also if any of you had the chance to read, there was a big column in the Star Tribune on Saturday where they talked about the opportunity of using shared services beyond just school districts, but also counties, cities. And in fact, we had a bill that was part of the bonding bill that created a cooperative grant program. If cities, counties, and school districts work together, that was adopted by both the Senate and House, and it was in the final bill, but it was vetoed by the governor. But that was also talked about in this article. So I'm hoping we can do something here to make up for that veto so that at least we can go forward to really experiment and get some real-life data. And again, we know this is happening all over the state without this bill. So if you say, then why do this bill? We have to have a more systematic way to go forward so that it's not hit or miss in one subject area and not in another, and that's what this bill does. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Ms. Lewandowski.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this bill today. I am the superintendent of the Intermediate School District 287, which covers 13 West Metropolitan School Districts and is one of three intermediate districts, as you know, around that ring the metro area. And indeed, I am passionate about shared services. Intermediate districts have, for over 40 years, that's really been the center of what we have done in many areas, heavily invested in special education, but also in areas like gifted and talented online learning and area learning center programs and services. And actually, District 287 offers over 140 such programs and services. So I think there's lots of history that shows shared services really are a good way to do programs for students, but also to be cost effective. In regard to this particular bill, it really matched up well with an effort that we have been involved with, a study for over about the last year in the area of transportation of students to our special education sites. We have about 600 very high-need students, often requiring very specialized transportation to get them to one of our five special education sites. And we have districts that are member districts sending students to these sites as well as non-member districts. And so we speculated, based on last year's bill that Senator Bonoff put forward, of could we really show that there was data to look at transportation in a little bit different way that might be more cost-effective. And what we did was go out and we asked a research company to survey all the research across the country about transportation and using a shared services kind of approach. And what we found was that research confirmed that while there are some districts doing it across the country in regular education, that the most benefit has been found when you look at special education kinds of transportation cooperative ventures. And so with that national kind of perspective, we initiated with our 13 districts a specific study that would look at some alternatives to every district transporting their own students to one of our five sites.
And what we found has been really very interesting. I think first and foremost, we found that districts understandably do a very good job of optimizing their transportation from their transportation district standpoint. But what they haven't necessarily looked at yet anyway is what would happen if we tried to optimize as a region the transportation of those approximately 600 students to our sites. And the results have been very interesting. We found that there are a variety of different things that we could look at. Some are very simple and that are within the ability of our intermediate to change in and of itself. For example, we could change the window of drop-off time that we could have a district say, you can bring your student anywhere between this window of time, and it would be longer than what we do right now. It would require us to staff for a little longer period of time, but it would give them more options in their scheduling of drop-off of students to our sites. But then we said, what if we step back and looked at an even larger or more complex alternative? And we said, what if we looked at transportation from a regional standpoint and not from an individual district standpoint? And we said, what if we gave an hour interval or an hour and a half interval to allow for greater routing of those buses so they could come drop off a kid, go get another round of kids, and it maximizes that regional approach. So we looked at a variety of different alternatives with the data from our member districts. What we learned is just the simplest possibility of changing that window of drop-off time. Leave everybody transporting the kids just the way they are now, except our sites in 287 would staff just for a little bigger window. In our region could save between $500,000 and $1 million for the state. Okay, so that's a relatively simple alternative. As you get more complex, it obviously becomes more complicated, more political, and yet what we saw is there's even more significant transportation savings to be had. With an hour to an hour and a half window of flexibility with a regionalized system, the savings for our 600 students, approximately 600 special ed students, is between $2,250,000 to almost $3 million of savings just on the transportation of those 600 students. So you can see that it's a study worth taking, we believe, a serious look at. We presented this to our superintendents a couple of months ago, and we were directed to go back and ferret out that data one more level of refinement and say, what's the difference between it? What's the savings by district? Now, we've known from our research already that the savings will vary from district to district. We'd never want any district to lose money. That wouldn't be much of an incentive. But we know that some districts, it'll probably be a neutral savings. Other districts, it'll be a significant savings based on a number of factors. But in short, we believe there's a lot of good data that we've already collected, and we are aware that at least one or two other intermediates are also doing this around the metropolitan area to take a look at a similar set of study results. We also are aware that we didn't want this to be a detriment to students, and so what we set as a criteria is that no student would ride the bus longer than they already do. And so we have been able to virtually guarantee this wouldn't result in longer bus times for students. We also recognize there'd be even some additional benefits. We recognize that a lot of districts are putting individual paraprofessionals on these buses because they have very high-need behavior students riding these buses. We didn't calculate the savings of paraprofessionals that are multiplied many times over by individual busing of these setting for special education kids. So we've scratched the surface with some degree of rigor, but we believe there are already substantial reasons to at least put this in front of our superintendents and see what they think. In support of the bill, certainly incentives are what would be needed in order to take a major step forward. This would require some additional routing equipment. It would require incentives for districts who might not have as much to save. So I bring you that as an example, and my concluding remark would be this is just one example of special transportation. There are many other different kinds of special transportation that could be further researched to see if there's other savings there for the state. So thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, I just want to underline that Ms. Lewandowski talked about saving $2 to $2.5 million just on transporting 600 students. This bill provides $1 million in incentive. Well, we would certainly make that back in just this one instance. So as we look at the dollar figure, I think we have to look at it in terms of spending a little to save a lot. Ms. Johnson.
Senator Chirizri.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonoff or Ms. Lewandowski. If this is best practice and you're going to save a lot of money, why does the state have to give you money to enter best practices? I hear you say very definitely you have to provide incentives, but isn't that an enough incentive to save $2 million? We have to give you $1 million. This is $1 million proposal. To save $2 million, isn't it an incentive enough to be saving dollars?
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, two things. Number one, when you make these kind of structural changes, it actually costs, so it's a cash flow issue, it does cost some money in many cases to be able to organize yourselves differently. And so to deal with that upfront expense and then the $250,000, for example, if they got the grant, would allow them to cover any upfront costs. But in addition, I agree with you. Last year I did it differently. I said if you save money, you get to keep 95% of it and just pay for the expenses with the 5%. That got overwhelming negative response. I couldn't get it passed. So I'm back here with a different approach, Senator Torres-Ray.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think it's an excellent question. One thing that we learned during the study that I referenced is that, again, the savings are not going to be equal. There well may be districts within our 13 membership district that would say, I'm not going to save any money. Why would I change? What we know is the savings decrease significantly if everybody doesn't participate. So this is really a systems change that requires people to see why it would be an advantage. And because special education costs are fully reimbursable, the direct impact isn't necessarily on a individual district, but I would make the case it's more on behalf of the state. And my understanding is the allocation for special education transportation often comes up short. So I think there's a higher level way of thinking about this that is required in order to make a significant systems change that even with the incentive will require a great deal of discussion by districts who might want to participate. So that's what I would offer in response to your question.
Members, I'm going to ask if Ms. Johnson would go ahead and give her testimony so that we have that on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Judy Johnson, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce and Association, representing over 900 businesses in the West Metro suburbs. For over 30 years, Twin West has served as an advocate for jobs and the growth of the business sector. I appreciate the opportunity to express the business community's support of Senate File 2901. This bill promotes by incentive, not mandates, opportunities for school districts and charter schools to share resources with the goal of achieving improved service delivery, greater efficiencies, and economizing operations, all of which stretch precious tax dollars to the benefit of student learning. We recognize that strong schools, effective government services, and vibrant communities depend on the success of business, which is reflected in our legislative priorities, the Twin West Business Agenda. Collaboration, partnerships, and shared services have become one path to reforming local government service delivery, including school district operations. We also support the provision that savings must be used to enhance educational quality and improve teaching and learning. Today's students are tomorrow's workforce and business leaders. During these difficult economic times, the business community understands the serious pressures on school funding and spending priorities. The business community also understands the great importance of an educated and qualified workforce now and in the future. The Twin West Chamber of Commerce urges your support of this bill, and we thank Senator Bonoff for the opportunity to speak in favor this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and thank you, Senator Bonoff, and Ms. Johnson, Ms. Wendowski, good to see you again. I appreciate what you're doing here. I guess the one suggestion I might want to make, you've got a section in the bill that specifies that a report has to be presented by the, I assume, the joint powers boards that receive the grants annually, and as long as the grant would survive. And I would suggest, and maybe we can talk to council on how to do it, but I think there needs to be something in the report that would document the actual dollar savings that this project, or these projects have accumulated. The language does talk about demonstrating the improved service and efficiencies and so forth, which is great, but I think, and partly in response to what Senator Torres Ray is raising, I think we need to see, if you spend $1 million to facilitate this coming together, you got to, it would be good to see what are the dollar savings that we're actually going to improve by doing that. And so I don't know what the language should look like, but I would just suggest we try to make that clear in the report section.
Chair and Senator Hand, I agree with you. And, in fact, in my cooperative facilities grant program, I thought I had that. I thought I had it in here, too, but I guess it just says the commissioner will award the grants based on that, and then we say to report. But we must, I agree with you, the report must include amounts saved.
Senator Hand and members, I think if we move ahead with this, I would be interested, and I realize that what we're trying to do is figure out how we can save money. One of the things that I think we spend about $200 million transporting students in the metropolitan area. And of that, it seems like we have a public transit system, and then we have a public busing system for our schools. And why can't we find out how that might be able to work a little more synergistically together? And I mean, I'd be interested in knowing what some of these other larger communities are doing. Do they use, do they have dual systems? And maybe it's the Metropolitan Transit Commission that's the problem. Maybe they're sending the buses down the wrong routes or something. Or maybe it's safety. Maybe the parents don't feel safe that their children are on public buses.
Mr. Chair, that is a concern I have heard.
But then we ought to start addressing that so that we can start bringing some of this together, so that we have safe buses, or we have the buses going down the right routes, so that we can kind of pull things together. And I know in the end there'll be some jobs. You know, the bus companies or whoever owns them are going to come and pound on our doors and say, "Well, you got to have, keep our buses." But we ought to find out what would work and how we can kind of make some changes to be more efficient.
Mr. Chair, this is the subject that I first started in, the transportation, as you recall, and I did two summers ago meet with Chair Bell to say, can you work with me? Could we do something as a MET council? And I was stopped in that process, but I'm interested in revisiting it. I think the most savings could be had in the transportation area to start with.
Okay. And I know we're just running out of time here, and another committee's coming in. Again, I would say that we're under some tight financial pressure this year, but I do think that there's opportunities here for future savings that could be used and plowed back into education funding. Senator Bonoff, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 2901 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, Senator Bonhoff moves Senate File 2901. Are there any amendments?
She just continues to work on it.
Okay, and Senator Bonhoff,
we'll
continue to work to be sure that the language at concerns Senator that Hand. Senator Hand and some others have expressed. Okay, on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, the same sign. The motion is adopted. Thank you, members. Thank you. And Senator Therese Ray will have to bring your bill back tomorrow, is it?
Yes.
Friday? Or we'll figure something out for you. Hey, I'm hoping not, but we'll maybe see how fast we can go tomorrow. Committee has adjourned.